Brazil, and what I thought we might do, I'm going to begin by showing not my slides, but the slides I've stolen from you about Brazil, and I'm going to get our colleagues to explain them to you so that all three of you can explain what we're going to see. At the end of this, we're going to concentrate on a topic called the Proval, which is the first, so far as I know, Brazil is the only country in the world which has an exit test from universities, from the undergraduate. And we're going to ask our colleagues how it works, what the politics are, what are the implications for higher education. Secondly, we're going to also concentrate on some of the socioeconomic issues of education quality in Brazil and the strategies of poor people as opposed to rich people. I'm going to get them to explain to us what those strategies are, and then you can decide for yourselves the implications and comparisons with the university. So, and there's also some beautiful photographs of your university as well. So, let's see here. How does it work? Now, want to explain this? Your slides.
Want me to?
Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, we have two levels, before university level and high school level. And we have private and public. And public is tuition free in both levels. And private you have to pay. However, quality at university level, at the public system is much, much better. And you don't pay tuition. But in the lower level, you have better school, better locations, and the private sector. So that drives the strategy people have.
Right. So let's look at the strategy, which is
we're going to talk about like the entrance exam.
I have information.
Okay,
here.
Good.
I don't know.
Okay, we can in a minute. So, what is the strategy of the elite? Explain that arrow to us.
Well, in order to get to the best universities, you have to go to private schools. So you pay for private schools, and then you take the entrance test. It's competitive, and the University of São Paulo offers 11,000 seats at undergraduate level each year. And we graduate every year in the state of São Paulo alone around 600,000 people. So we can offer only in good universities, probably including Campinas and the best universities, probably 30,000 seats. So 600,000 competing for 300,000 seats. Well, there is self-selection, and only 150,000 take the test to the University of São Paulo, and only 11,000 get admitted. So it's a funnel.
And highly competitive to get into the places in free public higher education. So if you are cognizant of this game, shall we say, and you have money, you pay for a private primary or secondary education, get your kids well prepared, do better on the test, and get into free public higher education. Correct? For poor people, here's the arrow in the opposite direction. Explain.
This is basically their only option. They get at the lower level, they go to public school. They cannot afford private schools, which are quite expensive.
Right.
And so they receive very poor quality education, and then they end up, they get to the market with low human capital accumulation, so they cannot really, they cannot really try to go to the public schools because they are very competitive. it's since they don't have good human capital, they cannot really compete for the good public schools for at the higher education. So they end up on the private school.
So the poor people, they can't afford private primary or secondary education, so they go to state schools, which are not as good as private schools in general. And they, because they don't, they're not as well prepared, they don't do as well on the entrance exam.
Exactly.
Therefore, they can't get into the free, high-quality public education. Therefore, they have to pay for private higher education. Right.
There's also a trickle going from the upper right square to the bottom right square. If you are like this very bright and enthusiastic public school student up to senior high school, you can manage to work during the day and pay for a prep school that trains you, that coaches you to take this very competitive and hard entrance exam,
so,
and you may
education.
Have a chance to be admitted to this good public university. But usually these kids go to fields like geography, history, Portuguese language, which are not very competitive, and they don't get good wages once they leave school.
Okay, so
usually they become public school teachers and they go on a strike every year.
Okay, so it's even more complicated. So it's not just a higher free and private higher education in general, but the competition to get into specific fields differs. Medicine, law.
Medicine, law, engineering.
Engineering are the most competitive, perhaps?
Yeah.
And hence, they have the highest scores.
Exactly.
Hence, they're more socially selective, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me give you an example. In law school, my daughter is a lawyer. She's a lawyer. And she's been to, when she finished school, she was, you know, in the job market.
Yep.
And the main firms, law firms in São Paulo area would take only consider students from the University of São Paulo or the Catholic University.
Yep.
They wouldn't consider other students for their selection.
I had this student.
They pre-selected their entry on the basis of the prior.
They would not interview any other people, only University of São Paulo.
Yep. I had a student that was following that track, the public's like basic school,
right?
And he said, and he, like his first choice, the first thing that he could get was a private college.
Mm-hmm.
Then he moved to the public university.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he took this entrance exam again and transferred to the public university. And he said, when I was there, nobody would call me for an interview, for an internship. Now that I'm here, everybody calls me. So this label of like public university, as you mentioned, like USP or in some case the Catholic University or Mackenzie or Getulio Vargas, it's very important.
The essence, I think, of public policy in education in Brazil has to do with these arrows.
Yeah.
And how you can mitigate that or alter it in an effective way, correct? Or in a cost-effective way. Right? These are economic returns to education. I think the blue is male. What is the blue? What is the yellow?
I don't recall now.
Oh my goodness, they're your slides.
I know.
The
blue is in 4-year increments, whereas
yellow
is in 0.
Ha
ha. Yeah.
You think.
So. All right, so they're males and females together. That's not the issue.
No,
there are
no.
differences in increment.
Okay.
But what would you have us come away with respect to these slides? What is our lesson from it?
What's this figure for the United States?
Economic returns to education. Well, the basic conclusion would be that although we have now maybe 65% of the age cohort attending some kind of higher education,
mm-hmm.
the gap between salaries of those who have completed higher education and those who have just completed secondary school is growing. So
mm-hmm.
more supply does not necessarily mean lower.
In Brazil, this thing is shrinking.
It's shrinking.
The premium for
higher
education is shrinking.
However, the share of the good universities in the total number of formados, or
graduates,
is decreasing. So you have more, the supply is larger. Larger with lower quality.
Lower quality.
So that may explain the shrinking.
Race to get into the free public higher education is increasing, right?
Yeah.
Because there the economic returns continue to be high and growing. Yes.
To explain how those patterns fluctuate over time, it's in the agenda for labor economists in Brazil. We have an interest in that too.
Okay.
But it has to do with supply, demand, and quality of the supply.
Does it also have to do with a change in labor markets?
Sure thing.
Sure.
Why is it, I mean, we have low quality higher education in the United States. Why is it that the gap between salaries and higher education and secondary is increasing and not in Brazil?
I'll give you the demand side story.
Yeah.
What sectors are booming in Brazil? Civil construction, agriculture. That requires
low skilled workers.
You don't have a booming tech industry?
But it's small.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, but it is but in share is very small.
It's very small, okay.
Have to look to the relative increase.
That's one part of the story. The other part of the story is that we have an increase, this latest cohort, we observe this increase in the quantity of graduates, but the quality is very poor.
All right, so well, we can speculate about
when
the future.
You look to the speculation average, without controlling for quality,
yes.
Then you get, you know, just shrinking.
If I manage to get the Provon or the ENAD data merged with the administrative data with wages,
yes.
I could answer that question for you.
Okay.
To what extent quality explains it, but that's almost impossible.
But we can do this. There are new opportunities. If you go the bar in law, they have this exam in which they approve only 15% of all lawyers.
That is this national or by state?
It's national. Nowadays national. So we can have data on lawyers. Where they studied,
very
and where they are.
We're and, trying to do the same with teachers.
We can do that with the economists because we are still in the feudal times in Brazil where you must have, in order to work as an economist, you must have your title recognized.
You have a license, like you carry it, like a driver's license as an economist.
We do have a license.
Yeah.
And what do you do with bad economists? I mean, do you punish them or something?
No, not at all.
You take away their
this
license
thing is
practice
right.
Economics?
Let me say that. This thing is this a Brazilian Association of Economists.
Does anthropology have a license yet?
No. It's a shame. Shame on us. It's pure rent seeking. You just pay like an annual fee to get the right to work as an economist. And if you sign like an article in the newspaper saying that you are an economist, they go down and check. Is this guy registered? If you're not registered, they call you and say, okay, kid.
Come on, you're saying that you're an economist, but I'm not saying your name here.
Now, does an education economist, does he or she qualify as a real economist?
No,
you've got to
have a degree, an economics degree.
No, but not in the education economics.
No.
Not in health economics.
No. If you're trained as an engineer, as an undergrad, then you go for a PhD in the United States and you get like a PhD in economics at Harvard.
You are not an economist. For this guy.
I'm sorry.
Hey, what are you?
You are an engineer
or something else.
All right. Well,
let's.
All right. This is getting more interesting by the minute.
Brazil is very peculiar.
Yeah. Okay. So, undergraduates. What do we got here? Number of universities, number of graduates. This is in the in Brazil at large, right? Not São Paulo.
In Brazil.
Okay.
And this is probably 1,000. Numbers, absolute numbers.
And the green and the gold again is what?
No, the green is private. In private, you have for profit and non profit, like religious, the Catholic, the Presbyterian, and the whatever.
Yeah, let me just say something. Private has been shrinking probably recently because they are in sort of crisis because students basically don't pay tuition.
And they are merging.
They're merging.
There are two or three groups that are buying
buying out all the other schools,
right,
and expanding.
Federal universities are expanding at a very fast pace in Brazil, especially in the countryside,
federal,
like rural areas, federal institutions.
With satellite.
And state universities, they have this other thing that's not USP or Unicamp or UNESP, which are the state universities in São Paulo, but they have the technological colleges, and that's also expanding at a very fast pace.
They're like
they're public, yes?
They're public and free.
Okay?
Technical.
By the way, ask questions if you have.
Yeah. Anything that you want to...
Faculty, full-time, and faculty, so this is faculty with PhDs.
This is a good measure of quality.
Of quality, right. Very high in the public, very relatively low in the private.
If you, the for-profit schools were, that host most of the students, you can see that they have very...
Now, in many parts of Latin America, you may have a full-time faculty member in a public university that will be also a faculty member in a private university part-time. Do you also have that in Brazil?
Yes.
It's not so common. Because of the type of contract, for instance, University of São Paulo, if you are a part-time professor, so basically you are not required. When you are a part-time, you still have the teaching hours. So you still have to do all the teaching load. So it's not so worth to be in a private school if you want to do research, if your focus is research.
Right.
Because then, you know, your wages is much lower, but you still have to do all the teaching.
Right.
So.
Okay.
But these are not rates. I mean, you can take the bottom graph relative to the top graph. It's hard for me to see much difference in...
The numbers in private schools are larger in terms of students and faculty, so the rates are lower, would be lower.
The percentage would be faculty in a private school with PhD would be
like half,
and in a public school it's like a little more than half.
But related to the total number, or because this gives you an idea of the population, it's aggregate numbers. So we have 40,000 PhD faculty at public universities and only 10,000 in private. If you move back, please, Steve, the other, for
sure.
The number of...
that one?
Number of graduates, if you can see, the green is much higher.
In per capita terms.
Yeah, if you do the, I didn't do it, but it's clear that the rates are very low for private.
Right.
And in private, non-profit are more similar because they are religious and serious
foundation
organizations in general. Although there are some non-profit that made that status in order not to pay taxes. So within non-profit, you have some serious ones and some not so serious ones.
Some traditional institutions and also some very opportunistic ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Graduate level. This is really interesting to us here. You have an evaluation system. You have essentially a ranking system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you explain it to us, please?
Well, it's peer review. Say in economics, we have 40 programs in graduate programs in economics. And the Ministry of Education chooses 12 faculty from the most relevant schools. And that committee reviews all publications and all objective information,
mm-hmm,
and rank the departments in a grade system between 1 to 5. That's objective. I mean, if you have so many points, it's a point system, you are 5. Then you can go to grade 6 or 7 depending on more qualitative evaluation, international relations and quality of publication,
right,
and impact factors, and you know, student prizes. We have many prizes for dissertations, and so this is more qualitative.
Okay.
So it can go to seven. Seven's
so seven is the highest.
However, the number of grade sevens for the country is limited.
There's a quota or a maximum.
Yeah, so if someone moves to seven, someone has to step out. So, and that is across fields. So you have, in order to an economics department go to seven, some biology or engineering department has to go down, and that's a war. Then it's a large committee with 50 people, and it's...
What's the logic of that? I mean, why would you put a quota on that? Doesn't make sense.
To avoid, basically, inflation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, everybody would be seven, believe me.
Yeah. One question.
That determines allocation of funds, federal funds, scholarships.
This is a transparent formula.
Not much.
Well, it's a
lots of politics.
So
from one to five, one to five is okay, but six or seven,
it's a war, believe me. People kill for them.
In many countries, when a ranking system is part of the government, the claim is that the system discriminates against non-state universities. Now, campus is part of the Ministry of Education. Do you have the same complaint from private universities in Brazil that the ranking system is biased?
The four number on grade six we have in economics, two are private.
Okay,
but this depends on it's peer review. I mean, economists, great economists.
Yeah.
Business administrators, great among themselves. It's peer review.
Okay.
So the private schools, the good ones, are treated as equal.
Okay.
Depending, that varies across fields, but that's not a bias against those public, those private schools that are respected.
All right. So here's a ranking of graduate programs across all fields. So this is from one to seven, and these are the number of programs, graduate programs, achieving like a three or four or five or six, et cetera.
And those can qualify for federal money, scholarships, and...
So it's almost bell-shaped.
Grants. Yeah.
But if you're at grade two, you are out next. It's evaluated every 3 years.
What do you mean you're out?
You cannot qualify for money, for scholarship. Your students won't get a scholarship or...
So campus would not fund your students if you hit it too?
Yeah. In the following.
So there's a real punishment
for
being in two. It's a real, yeah.
So for the private universities that are not very high ranked, and you have poor students going to those, what sort of financial aid do those institutions have? Because if they don't get federal funds, if they're not higher than a two, they're not. How do the students get there?
Tuition is relatively cheap, that's one thing, and they have lots of students per class. They can have like 300 students in a class. That makes it like affordable and applies a viable business trip.
Okay. So we're not talking the equivalent cost of US private institutions.
Oh, no.
No, far from that.
I mean, I knew it wouldn't.
Yeah, like the tuition, 380 reais would be like 200 bucks per month.
And now there is this voucher program.
And there's the voucher program.
This is a big thing.
It's another thing.
The federal government is putting a lot of money in a voucher program. So there are like several private schools where the more than 8% of their students
are on vouchers.
Are vouchers.
But if it's like a Pell Grant, in our terms. But if your school hits a two, you can't. Can you?
I don't know the answer for that.
This is one for graduate programs.
Okay, I see.
Because each and every graduate program, three to seven, gets an allowance that you can use for give money for your student to go to a conference or to buy computers or whatever. And your student is eligible on a competitive basis for scholarships. not for tuition, because there is no tuition involved with this. Yeah. They don't pay tuition, but they give you a stipend so that you can study full time.
Okay.
So you are eligible to compete. If you are one or two, your students will.
Now, this room has four or five people in it that study something called education corruption. In Brazil, in order to achieve a ranking of six or seven, is it possible that a rector may pay off the committee in some way? Is there a bribe involved?
Possible it is, not likely, because you know, you have in each field 12 faculty well respected, and they are chosen by the records, publications, etc. So they make a recommendation of a grade. This recommendation goes, and I've been in this committee, and it is a war. It's the hardest thing I've done in my life.
Really?
It's 1 week in Brasilia, you know, these 12 people fighting for becoming six or seven, because five is objective.
Right.
Up to five, you don't argue, just some.
It's six or seven, that's the big, big money.
And so it's hard, and then this committee makes a recommendation. We are recommended to become seven last time. We are doing this again this year, so 3 years ago. So then you go to a multi-discipline committee with 32 people, different people, and then you have to share the 17, 75 sevens available, and then you try to convince people and inform people.
But sorry, when
but
you say,
I don't. Well, it's possible, but.
But when you say you, does that mean the dean of the faculty, like yourself personally, are in Brasilia lobbying for the benefits or the assets of your particular faculty?
You check the 32 members in the committee and see if you have someone you know and call them. Well, pay attention to this information, or you don't ask them, well, please vote for us. I mean, because if he or she votes for you to get a seven, he might be losing 1 7 from his university because you were competing. So it's unlikely, but it's possible.
Okay.
Human that, beings.
That answers her question about the quota. You know, you have inflation because of, you might have inflation because of these subjective decisions on this committee.
Why don't you do a random draw?
that would be nice.
But you know, the ones that came before, because this, there's a professional bias. This thing was established by people in hard sciences. And they started with this, and they convinced the officials that should be applied to all fields. So, and that's why if you get the 75 sevens, they are allocated to physics, biology, chemistry, you know, the hard science people, because the publication abroad, and so those are the only ones that can publish everything abroad, because they don't use English. They use mostly, you know, figures and very low.
Usually they publish letters, not like real papers.
Yes, and
letters.
Sometimes
it's like 5-page papers. I met this like physicist. The guy said, "Oh, this year was not too good. I published only 15 papers." I said, "Come on, I'll publish that thing in my like my whole life."
20 co-authors.
Yeah, that's
they have more and more. The first page is larger than the other ones because the number. Anyway, so they dominated the field, and some people from the social science that were there first, they got their sevens, and they're not. They don't want to get, you know, to let it go. So it's very unlikely to have.
Very, very helpful.
However, there is a bias, original sin. Because some people that get seven comparatively to some people who get six, they are not as good as, but for us in economics, to get a seven, it's a war. Yeah. I mean, we have to kill someone in chemistry or whatever.
Okay.
But it is really well done. I mean, thanks to Vanderbilt, who established graduate studies in Brazil in the 60s, Werner Baer and Maneski and Sarrota, all the guys in Vanderbilt. This system was established with the help of Vanderbilt. And we have CAPES, we have CNPq, which is National Science Foundation. So. And it's probably the best thing in education in Brazil is the graduate system. It works very well comparatively, and it's very well done. Needs improvements, but it's trustable.
Okay. All right, average grade. Now by subject matter, look at humanities, linguistics. So the hard sciences tend to be higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, look at education down there. There we are again, the loser. Our scores are lower than biology and chemistry and physics and economics, and that's what I take away from that. The prestige of the education faculties in Brazil are not high by this chart. This is what I would imagine. Yes.
Yes.
I think there is my one thing there that just hard sciences, they have more. Maybe hard evidence of quality is easier to put together.
A lot of good reasons.
That might reflect a little bit.
Of course. Which is one reason why we need to import hard evidence into education.
What's interesting to me when I look at this is I think about Brazil's performance on PISA scores. They came in last in math performance.
Yeah.
And this is obviously an example of why.
Yeah.
You're looking at teaching of science and math scores is being rated so low, student performance is going to be extremely low.
Yeah, it's
especially on a comparison.
It's definitely one factor behind our very poor performance in international standardized tests.
There's more than one factor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, some of those arrows that we were looking at before,
they help a lot.
More questions about this? Okay. Average grade of graduate programs, number of programs.
It's about the same.
It's about the same. And then a little reminder of where we're at. University of São Paulo, 25, so.
One-third.
One-third of those are at University of São Paulo.
But you see that the exact science, earth science, biological, and there is one in political science.
Really?
There is a seven.
Where's
who
economics?
Would that be? Who got seven? No,
yeah,
seven.
Where's economics?
No, seven?
Economics
seven.
Is six.
The highest grade is six.
Management six. They rank departments. So we have three grades in our school. And accounting is five. But we are all top ranked. There is no seven in economics. Mm-hmm. And no seven in business. And
no six in
accounting. As a matter of fact, we are five in accounting. The second is three. There is no four.
Okay, so the highest rank of the teaching of science and math is here. And would the Faculty of Education at the University of São Paulo, would they be here or lower?
Probably five.
I don't know.
We have to check.
Okay.
I guess they are five.
I guess they are five.
Usually, University of São Paulo is
pretty high.
Top ranked in any field.
Right.
Even if the top rank is three or four, we are there.
Well, you are predominant in certain ways, if I understand this correct. Of the 75 sevens, University of São Paulo has a third.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Pretty effective lobbying up there.
Yeah. But yeah. the famous state for lobbying in Brazil is Minas Gerais, not São Paulo.
Well, there are a lot of famous states for that. Okay, here's a few photographs of the university itself. What this is?
The São Paulo main campus.
Main campus.
We have two campuses in São Paulo. Plus,
we are that building.
We are the supermarket over here. Yeah. This is the School of Economics.
Okay. Thank you.
And the School of Law is downtown near to the courts. The School of Medicine is downtown also. Yeah.
So may I ask, most of these buildings were constructed in what era?
60s.
So regime. A lot of cement. Yes.
Let me say, they are far apart. Would that, correct me if I'm wrong. This was a strategy by the military government to avoid a lot of communication between like units, and because the resistance to the military regime was
very typical. So they put it outside the main city so that you couldn't create riots.
Yeah, but the main city caught up, you see? This is like the main city.
As they all do. Okay. Another version of the same.
You can see the city back there. I mean, they are
nice features.
All right. Nice.
You see the pollution, right?
It's part of the pollution.
We can.
Smog.
We can see smog, that's for sure. Ah, what's this now?
No, this is a sort of comics.
Okay.
The typical person that attends.
What are the rivers here, or the water?
Well, the first one is the Ouro.
For rowing.
This one?
And this is clean. The other is the Pinheiros River, which is... like sewage.
If you try to swim here, you will melt down in like 5 minutes.
I see.
Or your wife will not accept you home.
School of Education is here, right?
Yeah. Okay, now point to where the economics is and the School of
Education. This is economics?
Yeah.
Education?
Very far.
And how far? How many minutes walk?
It should be
15 minutes.
Okay.
Well, it's huge campus.
Yeah.
In terms of area.
Okay, good. This is your
economics,
flag. Okay. And the flag on the left is what? So, and the one on the right is?
The school.
The university or the college.
Let's get agreement on that.
It's because it's skidding, right?
Yeah.
This is some activity.
Probably strike.
Some
students strike. The students go on strike in Brazil. That's the funniest thing about it, right?
They don't pay tuition, but so they go to
school. Yeah, there's an inverse correlation between the height of tuition and the frequency of strikes.
This is one of those strikes. You can see by the red flags that it is.
So what are the rules? If students are on strike, you still get paid?
The School of Economics never goes on strike.
Yeah, I think last time was 1979, we went on strike.
Sociology, they're on strike all the time. Yeah.
History, sociology, geography.
Yeah. They lead the movement. But it's funny, if you are a staff or a faculty and you go on a strike, one of the items of negotiations to finish a strike is not
To punish.
You know, then you get paid regularly as if you.
Right. Yes.
But this thing is changing.
On a yearly basis. Every year there's some sort of.
So this May. May is the year when we have the yearly discussion of
salaries.
Because of the
for the staff. You see this flag, the white flag on the right means Sintusp is this. Sindicato of the workers, so it's the staff union, and they're very aggressive. And nowadays in Brazil, I think the university is the stronghold of the union movement. So they try to do everything at university level because they cannot do it in banking or steel mills because
the soft underbelly.
And they usually are associated with very leftist parties. They are very political.
Right.
Which is an interesting question. I was wondering, because of, you know, we saw these big arrows, and you would assume students from high SES backgrounds would come into prestigious universities, but then they also hold maybe, you know,
the views that maybe perceived to be for the poor, maybe. You know, they happened in other developing countries too. So my questions read, first one would be the demographic characteristics of the student population. And then what would actually influence their
poor? It's ironic, isn't it?
It
tend to be rich kids, they get a free education, and they argue more for the poor and go on strike.
But you know what? The ones that go on a strike are from the School of Humanities. And the people from the School of Humanities are disproportionately from public schools.
Yes.
The poor of the university go on a strike.
Okay.
And some people are professional.
That's why you're going to be poor for the rest of your lives.
Well.
Some people are professional students. So they enter the School of Humanities and they take philosophy. It's very easy to, it's easier to enter. They're bright, they can pass in any exam. And then they keep there just organizing the people, right? The masses.
Okay, the is men. There no ceiling on how long they can remain as students?
Yeah, they can stay for, if they are on a 4-year program, they can stay for 6. 50% more, but then they can have 1 year license or leave. If you're pregnant, then that time doesn't count, and if you're sick, you can
extend.
I mean, you can maybe stretch it to 8 years, probably.
If they kick you out, you take the exam again, and you pass again, and you become a student. You're born again.
Really?
Yeah, happens all the time.
Yeah. So. And they keep.
Seems like there's a lot of work to do on education policy.
Oh
so.
Yeah.
Steve, can I ask you a question?
Please.
So, last year I taught a class on higher education policy. We looked a lot at Latin America, and two questions that were related that came out of that class. One, although the cost of attendance of higher education is quite high in many cases in Brazil, one of the things that you've managed to do that was very compelling to my students was you've managed to keep the cost of living relatively in check by comparison to other Latin American countries, about very significantly. In fact, it's only about 2/3 what it is in most other Latin American countries. Are there policies that the government has enacted to try and keep the cost of living for university students low? Relatedly, where is the accountability? One of our other understandings, although it was a bit opaque because most of the documents were in Portuguese, accountability and monitoring seem to be very decentralized, depending upon what part of the university you were talking about accountability, whether it was research or academic standards or graduation, faculty. It seemed to be very decentralized.
Yes.
So would you talk about those two things?
About university are autonomous in Brazil. We don't call them, all over the world they call Autonomous University of Mexico, the Free University of Amsterdam. So they're untouchable in the sense that at the graduate level we have this ranking system. But if you decide not to engage, you can do that.
The state requires for a basic 4-year undergraduate institution no accreditation.
No, there is accreditation. We are
okay.
Every 5 years we have to submit a proposal, but
to who?
To the state university commission, the state secretary of education.
Okay.
But this is more stamping. It's more having.
It's not rigorous.
No.
Okay.
For instance, there are some national exams in medical schools and law.
Mm-hmm.
So right now they have disaccredited 2 universities in law, 2 law courses.
Were they private or public?
Private.
Yeah.
And but we do our evaluation, external evaluation every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The University of São Paulo does it with an external committee,
mm-hmm.
with usually foreign faculty. Mm-hmm. We just did this in my school last year. So it's up to each university. We had this, and then Provão is, you know, the
at the end of the course.
We're going to get to that in just a second, and it'll help.
And that used to be done in the past.
Is there incentive? Is there incentive for universities? Because there are at least six accrediting agencies that you could join. And is there any incentive to join those to bring on foreign scholars and students?
Some, especially in business and engineering, some did it. Some are, you know, MBAs are accredited by AMA or whatever institution abroad there is.
I was just curious about the data that you mentioned about living expenses.
Mm-hmm.
How you have an idea how this data was collected? Or because I think that
there's
something that
World Bank report from 2008. That,
yeah, because that in some sense reflects the fact that universities are concentrated in urban areas where people are. So many of these people live with their parents.
Right.
So people don't move so much in Brazil as here, for instance.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they account for that.
Yeah, it'd be a great question.
It's because, you know, if you're living with your parents, I don't know how you compute your living expenses compared with someone
like
that's living.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
that'd be
small
a
percentage of students live outside their home.
Uh-huh.
Don't university students in Brazil get, like, huge incentives as far as like discount public transportation? I mean, all of that stuff.
Well,
is
that might be
a
substantial.
Nah.
I would say. I mean,
really?
We pay half price on that movie tickets, but it's
Friday night
movie
tickets.
But
transportation and culture activity.
What about food?
Like
no. No. Yeah. It's within within the university, you pay $1.
See, so there are specific. So maybe this is not because they said
but
food. You
only for the University
$1.
Of São Paulo. If you go to a like, private university, you go to the cafeteria.
I wonder if all that makes that chart that says graduates. There's much more incentive for somebody to go to a private university to graduate really quickly than there is for.
Oh yeah.
You know, for I would say if they have if there's no. You know, if they can stay 6 years instead of just four, and they're getting a dollar for a meal, they're in school, they're living with their parents.
Health coverage.
I think I would push my studies as far as I could possibly go, too.
Yeah, it's a problem for like.
But let me say just about this picture. They go on a strike every year, but nobody cares.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably one of the most successful meetings. They get 20, 50 people and keep loudspeakers, etc., but they never, the last 20 years, they never, well, 3 years ago they invaded the central office, but still 100, it's a law group.
Carlos, I would mention it's a headache for exchange students. We've had a lot of problems sending students down and their strikes at the beginning of the semester.
The first thing they shut down is the main restaurant where you pay $1. Then you have to go to the other restaurant and pay $8, $5, and they hurt the poor the most. Because the ones that they're supposed to help.
Maybe you could start charging them a registration fee to protest.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the University of São Paulo. Okay, this is, by American standards, a huge university. It's 40 schools, 4 hospitals, 4 museums, undergraduate enrollment 10,000, total enrollment 80,000 students.
Yeah.
That's enormous, right?
It's five campuses in different cities.
Yeah.
How many international students?
Very few.
Very few.
Very few.
What does that mean? 1%?
Less
than 1%.
And mostly graduate.
Graduate.
Yeah. Ah.
We have some from Latin America. Language is a barrier. We teach them the secret language, Portuguese.
Yeah, right.
And for what I heard, it's mandatory. Classes have to be in Portuguese.
Yes.
Really?
Even undergraduate?
Are we talking undergrad? All undergraduate?
Yeah.
But some of your graduate classes are in English and Spanish.
One or two.
Only one or two.
Yeah.
It's not allowed, right?
No, it's not
illegal.
Illegal.
I want to know
illegal.
Where that, what law, where does that law come from? Is it a federal law?
No.
It's university regulation.
How can you compete for
foreign students?
How many students on campus?
Beg your pardon?
On campus.
Only a few. Oh, very few. But we have only
11,000.
Becky speaks Portuguese. You should recruit her.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going. Let me just make an a statement. If you go to the School of Economics, you'll never see a strike or anything. That's why people don't like us on campus, right?
Yeah.
Usually they look on
the rich guys. No.
Okay, so here's the University of Sao Paulo. 97% of the faculty have PhDs, according to this. Papers indexed at the ISI. 25% of all the papers indexed come from your university. Yes?
Yeah. That's what.
So we're talking about a very powerful institution in Brazil. It's what the way I come away from it. Okay.
The numbers I heard, I never saw the figures, but that we get 55% of all grants in value in Brazil.
Yeah.
But I never saw
the equivalent in the state of Tennessee. All the money that the federal government, there's 30 institutions of higher education in the state of Tennessee, and we garner 75% of the federal money, so it's,
I would also note that this stands for all of Latin America as well, USP release, it's not
USP,
just Brazil,
is
really at the top. I mean, there are a couple of Chilean institutions that might be competitive, but other than that, this is for the whole continent.
Okay,
all
right, well, within Brazil, the ranking?
Well, this is probably...
I think we've seen this.
Yeah. There is those magazines that rank institutions in Brazil that we have many here. And
the 25% of all scientific publications in the country like the previous one. Okay, now here... 600,000 high school graduates in the state of Sao Paulo. Of those, 150,000 take the entrance test, 30,000 advance to phase two, and you admit 10,000.
Yeah, this is for actually undergrads, right?
Undergrads.
I understand. So,
that's
10,000 out of 150, essentially, who take the test. One out of 15. That's pretty selective.
And there is huge heterogeneity. So if you look at history, geography, it's like basically two candidates per spot. But if you look at medicine,
understand.
It's like 90.
We
do
understand.
Do you have a high school exit exam as well?
We do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And yes, virtually everyone takes that, other than those who drop out. It's mandatory.
No, it's not mandatory. It's say participation has increased over time because the stakes became higher.
Okay, so the 600,000 high school graduates, how many would take
the
exit exam?
Half, at least half of them.
Half?
A bit more. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was all.
No, it's not mandatory.
Okay. Wow.
But in order to qualify for federal programs, you have to take that exam.
Yeah.
They rank students according to their performance.
That's why I thought all of them would take.
Is there some concern that half the graduates don't take the high school exam?
They don't want to go to college, or basically they want to go to a public university. They don't need that, or they want to go.
Well, I thought you said in order. See, that's why
federal. Only federal.
If you want to get a federal grant.
Yeah.
It's called ProUni. University for everybody.
Voucher. So if you want to, it's a requirement to the voucher. You have to take that. So these things are increasing for that.
Sometimes nowadays, like the federal, this was the first year in which federal institutions ranked students according to this high school exam.
Interesting.
Okay.
Exit exam.
Okay. So then about half of them take the entrance exam.
Yeah.
And then with the entrance exam, do you have to pay for the entrance exam? Because they're specific to the universities.
It's free.
Okay.
It's free, but you have to, if you're not to get it free, you have to prove that you're poor, right?
Yeah. No, you pay
$50. It's
cheap. To take the test, but you can get a waiver.
So if you're borderline poor and you can't prove, then you pay $50 per se per university you want to apply to?
No. Just to take the exam.
Just to take the exam.
But the vestibular is specific
to
each university.
No. That's not the vestibular. This high school exam is not the vestibular. It's a different thing.
So for the entrance exams to the specific universities, though?
No, then you have to pay.
Normally, the universities, they combine the result of the exit
exam with their own admittance exam.
Oh, interesting.
So they combine both.
So you have an index score.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, so, and this high school exam
really
has gaining more weight.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Now, the 150,000, is this in the senior year, or is this of all of those graduates at any point over there?
Yeah.
Because it's also, they may take a couple of years off before taking the entrance exam.
Yeah, but say, usually this is proportional.
Okay. So
I would say
over
that
time.
They are all within 2 years of graduation.
Okay.
Be almost everybody.
Okay.
Only a few guys later on. I have a friend that studied, was 45, started studying philosophy. So they go to, but this is, those are exceptions.
I know Steve wants to move on, so real quickly, why is the exit exam gaining weight over the entrance exam?
Because it's become more important to get access to federal universities. Now it's, for several of them, it's the only criteria.
Interesting.
That was a major change now. That happened from last year for this year.
Okay.
Now it's a requirement on the federal government. And the federal government requires that exam.
Yeah.
And the federal universities use that, and they're expanding. Mm-hmm. So that's making people look to this exam more.
Yeah.
And also some private universities take that, they score in that test into account when to admit students. And USP also gives some weight to that, right?
Yeah.
It's like 10%, you get a bonus of 10%.
Yeah, something like this. But
your
this
score.
We tried this year. But they
didn't work this year.
The test, they had a problem, delay, etc. We had to give up.
Okay.
So next year we will consider.
There was fraud, actually. That was a case of fraud in education.
How did it happen?
That exam leaked.
Okay.
Because the stakes went up.
And
the security
sold the thing to the press.
Stakes went up, but security did not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Big problem.
And guess what? The guy in charge was an economist, a friend of us, and then he didn't realize that the stakes were higher, but the security that they had in place was the same.
You know,
mistake. Cost him his job.
Should have given him off.
Sure it did.
But we're talking about maybe 30 million people taking the exam, or
No,
3 million people.
Yeah.
In a country as big as US,
mm-hmm.
So you have exams in each and every city.
Right. It's like the SAT here.
Yeah.
It's about 3.5 million. Yes.
Wow.
All right. Cooperation. You were asking about this. Lots of cooperation with other universities. Faculty exchanges, yes. Now,
go back, Steve, because that's interesting. I mean, they've got over 250 universities, that they participate with, but it's less than 1%. Are you talking about, is this all, or is this University of São Paulo?
No, I mean, those are exchange students. We are not counting when you ask it for foreign students.
Okay.
We thought of students, foreign students take the whole program. That does not include exchange students that stay for last semester or a year.
Okay.
But still, it's small.
It's small.
In our college, we have 3,000 students, the student body, undergraduate, and we exchange 150 each semester, each year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 5% of our students spend a semester abroad, and we get 5% of foreign students. So, and we and the School of Engineering are in the top of receiving. So overall, this foreign participation is small.
Is that a revenue driver?
No.
Is it seen as a revenue driver?
No, not
at all.
Actually, University of São Paulo, we cannot charge any kind of tuition. It's a terrible sin.
You're really handcuffed.
There's no incentive. There's just no incentive.
But students don't get scholarships to study abroad, but they want to.
Yeah.
So what we do, as we have with Vanderbilt, we have a tuition waiver on both sides.
And that's common for most exchange. Yeah. I mean, all of Vanderbilt's exchange programs at the graduate level are fee waiver.
Right.
So there's no, I mean, other than just building international relationships, there's no financial incentive.
I understand. Okay, let's get to this. This is for the non-Brazilians in the room, because all the Brazilians know this. So I'm going to ask my colleagues to read this. about the program.
Which has a new name now.
Yeah, it has a new name, yeah.
It's not the same thing,
not exactly the same
thing. Okay, we want to hear about that then. Okay, so here is a test given to undergraduate majors in each of the, in many of the majors. Here are the guidelines for this test. This is an exit test from undergraduate university.
Mandatory.
Okay, the majors went up from 3 in 1996 to up to 26 majors now. The key is the grade of the institution by the average grade of the exit test in each major in each institution is published in the newspapers, put on the web. So you as a incoming student who wants to study economics, for instance, you can go on a website and say, okay, what was the average grade in economics from the Proval last year or the year before? And sometimes there may be surprises. That is to say that the program that you might have thought was the best in the country might not be. Or the program you thought was lousy might not be. So this is a measure of transparency. But the grade of each institution is public, but the individual's grade, your personal grade, is confidential. So you only you know it. It's averaged, according to, okay? On the other hand, I put this in, I don't know if this is correct, but if I'm an employer and you're applying to me to work at my firm, I just may ask you, oh, your application looks excellent. By the way, what was your Proval grade last year in economics? Mm-hmm. And you could say, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Heinemann, that's confidential. Okay. It's confidential, but there's four other applicants who are saying, here's my Proval grade, which leads me to suspect that if you say it's confidential, maybe you're not as good as the other people.
It trickles down. You're absolutely right.
Okay, so it's a signaling device into the labor market. It's the only one I know in the world so far. And so here's some questions. And the United States is debating this a lot right now. So here's some questions for us. How does this test accurately incorporate the variety of syllabi? Just talk about economics. There might be a variety of ways in which you might approach economics from Sao Paulo to wherever else. And the test.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
I believe there's a federal standard. There's a federal curriculum. Like the